From the radio ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth. The kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. What do you say we get things officially started with?
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, our eyes are placed in front because it's more important to look ahead than look back. Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps. That and the probability that the back of your head is covered in hair anyhow.
You're messing with my Zen thing, man.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, yeah.
Some cool, some not so cool.
What was there?
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Really?
You might be quizzed.
Really? Come on. Everybody knows you're jerking our chain. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1918, President Woodrow Wilson sailed for the World War I peace talks in Versailles, becoming the first U.S. president to travel to Europe while in office. As for the peace talks, well, they pretty much ended up setting the stage for World War II. So that's how that went. And it was on this day in 1956, the Million Dollar Quartet. Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash got together at Sun Studio in Memphis for the first and last time. That was sort of the critical mass of talent, never to be repeated.
Staggers the imagination.
This probably won't surprise you too much to find out that the major drug makers, those who we refer to as Big Pharma, have been rattled by RFK Jr.'s vow to ban a key tool in their arsenal. I mean, how many times have you turned on the TV and seen drug ads? I'll bet you, if you watched 2 hours of TV last night, you probably saw at least four major ads, highly produced, very expensive ads. Not only expensive to produce, but very expensive to place the time buys on the networks. Probably saw at least four, maybe more, ads for someone there in the big pharma realm, right? Well, U.S. and New Zealand are the only two countries in the world that allow big pharma to run direct-to-consumer television advertisements. And of course, this is a strategy that's given the industry some of its biggest years before the pandemic. Now, RFK Jr., as you know, has been a fierce critic of the practice, and he's on the precipice of being tasked with regulating the industry. And that's a possibility that has company executives sounding the alarm about what his confirmation by the Senate would mean for their bottom line. Now, those conversations began in earnest late last month when one industry analyst predicted that a ban on DTC marketing, direct-to-consumer, DTC marketing, would represent the biggest threat to profit margins in decades. Now, that's only a theory on their part, okay? Maybe there's some truth to it. But then again, maybe not. Well, Mark Steffen, writing in Trending Politics, points out that research firm Intron Health said the normally robust profit margins of new drugs would have to be anticipated as scaled-back shells of themselves under a Kennedy HHS, forcing pharmaceutical companies to rethink their approach to investing in cutting-edge medicines and therapies. Perhaps. And Intron wrote, according to Fierce Pharma, whilst we have a relatively benign view of RFK's impact on the pharma industry, one thing that does worry us is the potential for the U.S. government to ban DTC advertising of drugs. We see this as the biggest imminent threat from RFK and the new Trump administration. Now, naturally, if he's going to ban this kind of advertising, direct-to-consumer advertising, It has to go through a political process, a constitutional process. Okay? But hey, we banned cigarette advertising way back in the 1960s. I think it was 1967. When I started my radio career, we used to play all kinds of cigarette ads on the radio. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. I remember that like it was yesterday. And then suddenly those ads vanished. But what happened to the cigarette industry? It continued to thrive. So, are they panicking in the big pharma realm needlessly? I don't know. Probably not, though. But it's pointed out here that because the return on DTC drug marketing is quite high, this is according to research, marketing research they've done, estimates ranging as high as 100 to 500%, depending on the drug. Drug companies are almost certainly going to take a hit on drug marketing, even if they scale back the size and scope of their campaigns. So Kennedy would face intense pushback and court challenges by well-financed lawyers for Big Pharma, who would argue that a direct-to-consumer ban infringes on companies' First Amendment rights. But that didn't work with the cigarette industry. So it remains to be seen whether Kennedy, he's a self-described health nut, he really is. It remains to be seen whether he trains his agency's focus on instituting healthy living among Americans by reforming oversight of national food and nutrition policy, or instead goes after entire industries or institutions. I don't know to what degree the president might be in the background saying, whoa, wait a minute. Now, the black sheep of the storied Kennedy clan, which he certainly is, has made clear his disdain for pharma's advertising strategies, saying that it dupes Americans into taking medicines that are unnecessary or counterproductive. Now, mind you, we're not talking about ads for aspirin, okay? This is heavier duty stuff. Now, in late October, Kennedy said, while participating in Tucker Carlson's nationwide tour in Glendale, Arizona, he said, one of the things I'm going to advise Donald Trump to do in order to correct the chronic disease epidemic is to ban pharmaceutical advertising on TV. There are only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical advertising on the airwaves. One of them is New Zealand, the other is us, and we have the highest disease rate, and we buy more drugs, and they're more expensive than anywhere in the world. Well, when you put it that way, starts to make sense, doesn't it? So how do you handle something like this? You don't want to cripple an industry, but we are, after all, talking about the pharmaceutical industry. Just like back in the 60s, we were talking about the cigarette industry. By the time cigarette advertising was banned on radio and television, it was still allowed in magazines. But by the time they banned advertising on radio and television for cigarettes, the warnings would have already been made in the healthcare industry about cigarettes linked to lung cancer. They also, at the time, I mean, they knew enough about it back then, that long ago. They knew enough about it to link cigarette smoking to other diseases, too, not just lung cancer, but other diseases. Asthma was in there for one. Emphysema was another one. I had a father-in-law die from emphysema. So are we jumping the gun on this by pushing for a ban on pharmaceutical advertising? Here again, if you have somebody who goes to the doctor regularly, let's just say you visit your doctor twice a year, and you're a smoker, you're a drinker, you've got bad habits, habits that would cut your life short, don't you think your doctor would tell you? Well, don't you think it's the same thing when it comes to a person's need for any of these big pharma products? Let's just say, Ozempic. If you really needed Ozempic, don't you think your doctor would tell you? Don't you think the doctor would recommend it? You know, write something on that little piece of paper in that that strange handwriting they use? Fix you up with some kind of a prescription? So, I don't know. I think at this point, which is still early in the game, I mean, the Trump administration hasn't even begun yet. Although you wouldn't know it, right? We've already got, we got Tom Homan down on the border. We got RFK Jr. here already at work. Man, that's a good sign, you know. But I don't know. At this point, I think I would be content to just kind of wait and see. Because it really is kind of stunning how much money the big pharma industry throws into advertising just on television alone. And they also advertise on radio. They advertise in magazines. How much of their total income in the big pharma industry goes toward advertising, expensive advertising? I'm not talking cheap advertising in like a little local newspaper. We're talking about networks. That advertising is not cheap. For instance, next time you watch a nationally televised football game, kind of take note how many big pharma ads appear during those broadcasts. Then get an idea as to how much the advertising costs. If the game is big enough, it could cost millions to place a 30-second TV commercial. So bear that in mind. I mean, how many politicians have won elections over their promise to curb the cost of pharmaceuticals? Yeah, that was a big deal with George W. Bush, wasn't it? That was one of his campaign promises. He was going to bring down the cost of prescriptions, and he did to a degree. But they're still expensive. There's an old saying. Now, just how old it is, I don't know, but I'd be willing to bet it's really, really old. In fact, it may go back as far as earliest humanity. Divide and conquer. And that's what's happening in the Democrat Party, Democrat culture, the left, you name it. They are being divided. Hey, it was bound to happen. Rachel Maddow is fuming over Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski's Mar-a-Lago meetup with President Trump. And they claim, those two, Joe and Mika, claim that their visit was a notable attempt to soothe viewers' fears. Well, in reality, I can tell you what happened. And I'm not the only one who believes this either. Management at MSNBC. Oh, I don't mean just MSNBC management. I'm talking about management above them. And I'm trying to remember, who's the big owner? Comcast? Yeah. The biggies at the company and the corporate level basically ordered the two of them to go and have a talk with Donald Trump. Because, face it, they said some really nasty things. They were the ones who said that Trump is literally Hitler. And they said that Trump supporters, Trump voters, MAGA people, are Nazis, which, of course, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. And yet here they are allowed on network television. Okay, granted, you got to pay for MSNBC, do you? No, you get MSNBC for free. It's part of the basic package on cable systems and satellite dishes. All right. So here they are on MSNBC saying all these things that are really libelous. There's not a shred of truth to it, but they're out there saying these things. And they're doing this every day of the week. Then, boom, the election comes and goes. And, ha, much to their consternation, Donald Trump won, and he won big. Plus, Trump basically won the House and the Senate. Now, this is going to reshape politics in general for the next several years. I don't know if there's going to be a Supreme Court seat to fill during Donald Trump's second term, but that's entirely possible. Three guesses how that's going to go. So anyhow, the Morning Joe duo, the dastardly duo, are claiming that their visit was an attempt to soothe viewers' fears. Really? Meanwhile, back at the ranch, MSNBC's ratings nosedived. In fact, they lost half of their audience. By the morning after the election, they lost half of their audience. So Rachel Maddow has taken a pay cut. I think she's taken a cut of $5 million. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. She was being paid something in the neighborhood of, $15 million? $15 to $20 million, somewhere in that general neighborhood. for doing one show a week. Who in the world has that much clout that they can command $15 million a year for showing up on TV once a week? Johnny Carson never even made that kind of money, and he showed up 4 days a week. So there's also the fact that Comcast is actually very seriously eyeballing the prospect of selling off MSNBC. And one of the people who's considering buying it is Elon Musk. So Joe and Mika got a weird wake-up call very recently, and that is the era of attacking Trump is ending. Oh, you can still attack him, but will these two be able to attack them? I mean, who else would hire them? Nobody would want them. So they had to go and visit with Donald Trump. Now, here's how the Daily Mail reported it. MSNBC anchor Rachel Maddow is reportedly furious with her Morning Joe colleagues for meeting with Donald Trump after he won the presidential election. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski visited the president-elect a little over 2 weeks ago at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida, to restart communications and set a new approach ahead of his second term. Maddow, along with other hosts at the troubled liberal network, are calling this move by the married Morning Joe co-hosts opportunistic, according to a report in the U.S. Sun. The meeting at Mar-a-Lago created a lot of tension in the teams, and many other stars see both Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski as opportunistic and with very low self-respect and forgetting their values of being journalists. Pardon me while I chuckle at those terms, values and journalists, with independence and integrity, said a journalist who's worked at MSNBC for 15 years. Really? Speaking on the condition of anonymity, the journalist, I wish they'd put that word journalist in quotes, really. The journalist made it clear who has a problem with Morning Joe pivoting from calling Trump a fascist and an admirer of Adolf Hitler to having a cordial meeting with him to figure out coverage going forward. Wow. The article continues, says, they have lost a lot of credibility. Rachel Maddow is pissed at them, as are other presenters like Chris Hayes and Ari Melber, all of whom are complete idiots. They're so frustrated, the journalist said. It was such a stupid thing to do, they added. They've bent the knee to ensure not being targeted by Trump and the whole MAGA world. See, and that's how they see us. They see us as part of MAGA world. Make America great again. What's threatening about that? I mean, it's almost as if by default, their slogan is destroy America again. I mean, it kind of stands to reason, doesn't it? So anyhow, this is where it gets good. The article continues. This comes as MSNBC has devolved into utter turmoil following Trump's win. The network's viewership has taken a precipitous dive. Comcast is considering spinning off the cable channel, and Maddow agreed to a $5 million pay cut in her new contract. Well, at least she got a new contract. Which is good for her, because if they do sell the network and she's immediately fired, the sellers of the network, Comcast, would have to pay off her contract. Now, according to Brzezinski, their rationale for reaching out to Trump was to soothe the fears of their viewers who were worried about his cabinet picks. At that point, Trump had already selected Fox News host Pete Hegseth for defense secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for health secretary, and former Congressman Matt Gaetz to lead the Department of Justice, who later withdrew from the nomination process, paving the way for former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi to take his place. And mind you, all of these are great appointments. They really are. These are terrific appointments. And then it continues, Scarborough said the three talked about a lot of issues, including abortion, mass deportation, threats of political retribution against political opponents, and media outlets. Scarborough left the Republican Party in 2017 because of its embrace of Trump, shared that they both didn't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, and we told him so, he says. Insiders are reportedly worried that this will devalue the MSNBC reputation as a reliably anti-Trump network, which I don't know about you, but I see that as a good thing. Said, most of us don't want to be a part of that, the journalist told the U.S. Sun. Some are thinking about trying to join other media organizations where we can do our job with respect and values to bring truth to the table without being pressured by the people in power. Bring truth to the table? Russia, Russia, Russia? Russiagate? Prostitutes peeing on the bed? That's truth? Well, that may be their truth, but it's certainly not truth. If you like to surf the internet, particularly YouTube, for conservative material, as I do, you have no doubt come across something called the Timcast. Now, the Timcast is something produced by a fellow by the name of Tim Pool. Now, he's a young fella. He was born back in 1986. And I kind of enjoy his programs because he's decidedly conservative, and he came about his conservative beliefs organically. Now, I wish I had time to read to you his entire bio. It is amazing. It's really amazing because when you read the bio, you find yourself asking things like, Gad, can real people do this? Can real people succeed by going down this kind of a path? But trust me, he did. He's one of the better known podcasters. And recently he talked with the forthcoming director of the FBI, assuming, of course, that Kash Patel is approved. And I don't see why he wouldn't be, because we have a majority now in the House and Senate. But I don't know. Man, nothing surprises me on the Democrat side, okay? They'll try anything. But just the same, Kash Patel, as we pointed out yesterday in the podcast, is eminently qualified for the position of director of the FBI, and our country will greatly benefit if he's approved. Well, he was talking with Tim Pool the other day, and I have a clip here of what of what Kash Patel had to say regarding January 6th, and it's not surprising, but what is kind of halfway stunning is the fact that now we're publicly talking about it, and we're able to, because we won the election. Listen to this.
What you need to show is whether or not the FBI and government agents were using undercover operatives and informants on the day of January 6th, because if you can show that, you know they've been at, hang on, but the paperwork shows having run informants, that's a 6-month buildup, minimum.
Right.
Minimum. It's not like they just dropped them into the Proud Boys and said, hey, go, don't disrupt, please. So once you prove that, then you defeat the insurrection narrative with the FBI's own documentation. Forget what the videotape shows.
Just for people who you can't see what's going on in the room, the reason why Cash just said, hang on, or whatever, is because I started smirking and rolling my eyes. And what I meant to convey with that is, come on, we know they were involved.
Let me clarify, though.
Yeah. I'm not saying I know definitively. What I'm saying is a reasonable suspicion is that there were agents. There's a video showing a guy with an earpiece pulling people into the building. All right. Mm-hmm. You combine that with the evidence of Ray Epps, and it looks like you have a preponderance of evidence suggesting there may have been federal law enforcement involved in making that thing happen.
I'll get you beyond a reasonable doubt. All two right. Pieces of information. Ray Epps was on FBI's most wanted list one day, and the next day he was off of the FBI's most wanted list. There are only two ways that happens. You die or your informant. Put that aside. Under congressional testimony, Jill Sanborn, who I used to work with, the head of the FBI Counterintelligence Division, in charge of all these investigations, testified under oath when Senator Cruz asked her, flat out, were there federal agents involved with January 6th? And she said, quote, Senator, I can't answer that at this time. Not, if the answer was definitively no, having been a DOJ FBI guy myself, she would have gone there and said, nope, absolutely not. The reason she said I can't answer that is because of the same stonewalling they gave us during Russiagate with Christopher Steele, Halper, and everybody else. It's the same narrative, and I'm telling you they were there.
So you're saying that she said I can't answer that because the answer is yes, and that would compromise whatever their operation was.
Exactly.
Isn't that interesting? Now tell me that you didn't suspect all those months ago that Ray Epps was a federal plant. I think we all suspected that. All of that video showing him trying to egg on the crowd to storm the Capitol building. And then that one line that he blurted out, tomorrow we're going to come back here and we're going to storm the Capitol. He was a federal plant. I mean, you'd have to have been brain dead not to believe that. Then, of course, CBS came along, and we've already seen how CBS likes to do business with the Biden administration, do the bidding of the Biden-Harris administration. I mean, look at that cluster they created in 60 Minutes a few weeks ago when they interviewed Kamala Harris and then edited her answers. All been proven. Well, CBS did that 60 Minutes piece on Ray Epps, trying to clear him, trying to portray him as a victim. He and his wife are now victims. Bullcorn. He was a federal plant. He's still a federal plant. He's still free. I mean, and I'm not saying that Ray Epps should be prosecuted, but he should be exposed for what he is or what he was on January 6th. He was a federal plant. Now, there is enough evidence to be gotten from what we already have about Ray Epps to prove this. What's missing is the effort to prove it. And this is what we need to do. We need to put forth the effort to prove that Ray Epps was and is what we suspected him to be. We have to have substantial evidence. The evidence is out there. It just hasn't been gathered yet. Come on, let's move on over to the Comedy Corner with an encore performance from Buddy Fitzpatrick. This guy's funny.
I bought a new car. I bought a Nissan Versa. I don't know if anybody else drives the cheapest car in the world. Anybody? Anybody? Do you really? Do you drive one? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Be careful. Be careful, really. It's horrible. They're always hydroplaning. Not even raining and it hydroplanes. That's really, right? It's got the baby horn, so it never tells the other drivers how angry you really are. I always regret using it. Hey, Rambo! It's horrible. They should make cars with like 10 horn sounds around them so you can choose the sound you need depending on the situation that you're in. I don't know why they don't do that. They'd be a lot more polite too, wouldn't they? You know, you're driving, you see somebody trying to cut you off. Whoa, 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 whoa. You're at a light, the light turns green, the guy in front of you just sits there. Hey, 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 hey. Hey. See somebody walking, they stumble and fall. That would be the way that would work, right? Yes. I always laugh when I see a smart car. I love smart cars. They just crack me up. Anybody drive a smart car? I'm so sorry if you do, because they just make me laugh. Have you ever been on a highway and you see somebody driving a smart car and you look in at the guy driving and they're driving like nothing's wrong? Isn't that weird? Right? Because they should be like this. I know, right? I don't know. You know. They're not. They're driving like nothing. Because it looks like it was in an accident, but the front survived. And he hasn't figured out that the back is missing yet. I actually think the smart car looks like the car you put in the trunk of the real car you drive in case that breaks down. Then you have a spare car and you just pop it out, start it up. Right? One time somebody, an audience member, was like a little hurt. He's like, I drive a smart car and they're very good. They're safe, you know, they're great in the snow. And I said, yeah, could you just pick them up, shake them off, put them back down, just drive away. It's good to be here. I'm feeling good. I fell not too long ago. Oh my gosh, I was in New York, had a bad fall. And I realized the moment that I fell, I'm actually at that age where I really shouldn't be falling. Do you know what I mean? I knew it the minute I fell. When you're young and you fall, your first thought is, I hope nobody saw me. When I fell, my first thought was, I hope somebody saw me.
Get out there and make it a great Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.